Athens News Matters is sponsored in part by the WUGA Community Advisory Council, dedicated and involved individuals who help WUGA stay connected with our listeners, community organizations, and issues in the Athens area. Learn more at WUGA.org.
Today on Athens News Matters, why advocates are celebrating changes made to proposed data center ordinances.
Because of our ordinances, they can do a really responsible data center.
Plus, a coalition of UGA scholars explores Middle Georgia's Native American history.
During a busy day, it can be hard to make room for even one more thing. So it's a real plus that All Things Considered from NPR News is great for multitaskers. You can confidently add being well-informed to your to-do list and know that you will get it done. Whether you're cleaning out your junk drawer on a quick drive or something else, listen to All Things Considered every weekday afternoon.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley. Data centers are flocking to Georgia, and with them, protest from residents concerned about the project's use of energy and water. Advocates in Athens Clark County have packed public meetings in recent weeks, determined to have a say in local legislation aimed at regulating data centers. Their demands have centered on public transparency and the use of renewable energy. Laura Iyer is the founder and chair of the Southern Sustainability Institute, a local environmental nonprofit. Olivia Asher is a member of the statewide science education organization, Science for Georgia. She is also a PhD student at the University of Georgia, studying bioinformatics. Both have appeared at public meetings advocating for local data center regulation. Iyer and Asher sat down with WUGA's Emma Auer to break down a series of recently introduced ordinance amendments related to data centers and whether they feel their demands have been met. Here's their conversation.
Can you tell us a little bit about the organizations that you're a part of?
Southern Sustainability Institute is a nonprofit, a very local nonprofit, and it works on very local, tangible sustainability projects or thought education around education. And again, the purpose of this nonprofit is to work kind of in your own backyard. And so a lot of what we do is education. The data center kind of came up as something that we felt like that the public needed to be, well, ourselves and the public needed to be educated.
I got involved with Science for Georgia just over a year ago. And that's when I first learned about data center. Science for Georgia is a Georgia-wide nonprofit based in Atlanta that's focused on adult science education and science-informed policy in Georgia. And Coalition of Athens Scientists is a more local group. We're not a nonprofit, we're just a community group. And this group is just a community organization that aims to connect scientists with their local community to contribute to science-informed policy.
So before we begin jumping in on the actual ordinances that are proposed for Athens-Clark County, can we just discuss the basics of what data centers are?
A data center is basically a really big computer. And there's going to be a bunch of different types of data centers. So there's some data centers that are used for storage. So when you store your photos in the cloud, that's being stored in a physical, it's not cloud, it's stored in a physical location, a data center. And storage does not use up particularly much energy. So these data centers have been around for a long time and you never really heard anyone talking about them, generally because they had a relatively minimal impact and were physically rather small. Now that we get into the age of AI, we need bigger computers to run AI models. One example of a very large one is about half the size of Manhattan for one data center.
Wow.
And these data centers, they cannot ever stop running. So they tend to have, they need to have a lot of backup power, they need to have backup resources, and they tend to get priority for water and power over the local community, because they cannot run these computations without, if they lose power.
It gets into some gray areas too, and that we've been having those discussions. So there's some businesses that might need a data center to do the thing, very important things, you know? So it goes beyond just, like the cat videos and just the normal queries, you know? So there's some really good things that are coming out of this too, and some businesses need it. So we also recognize that piece of it. It's not all, and people have different opinions about this. However, we also want to say there is a place for them as well. And we just want them to be good neighbors, and we want to be very open to what we're getting into. And so we have to kind of balance that, but we just need to be aware that it can go really out of control and really impact your community as well.
You said a little bit already about wanting data centers to be good neighbors. Can you tell us a little bit more about why you think local governments and residents should have oversight of data centers that come into their communities?
Yeah, because what we're finding out as we're, you know, becoming more educated about this is that they can have big consequences. And I'm learning every single day. Like, I learned some things yesterday that, you know, hadn't come top of mind. And so, for example, they can be very water intensive. And as Olivia stated, these have to always run, and the water is for cooling. These things can get very hot and they have to be cooled. And so you balance things like, I know this part of the ordinance, they're saying, well, it's going to be closed loop, meaning it won't use as much water. But to be a closed loop cooling system, as opposed to evaporative system, you're going to use a lot more energy too. So it's kind of a trade-off. And then the energy consumptions can be very, very high. And you're not really sure by just looking at the size of a building how much energy they're going to use. And that's also very secretive. We're struggling on getting a handle of actually how much energy they use. The other thing we're learning is like backup power. Again, they always have to be running. So these backup generators that they have, I mean, if they're diesel or something like that, I mean, that's going to be extremely polluting. And we're not talking just one little generator. We're talking about many together to power this. So that could be a problem, like in terms of air pollution, using water. I mean, if we've had a drought, like who gets that water? I think that's another question. Does the hospital get the water in extreme drought? Who's going to, or is the data center going to get preference over that? I think we need to understand that piece of it.
Again, to the control the local communities have over this are in terms of mainly zoning for data centers, which can control all of these problems that Laura mentioned. So they can set limits on the water use. They can require a transmission line assessment. They can require, so there can be a lot of power that local communities have to control if a data center does still want to come into the community, that is going to have a minimal impact or even a positive one.
The other thing we're learning is, you know, the amount of money that some of these centers are willing to pay for land to put a data center is crazy. Like, you know, 10 times, 100 times more than, you know, so this, they're not resource strapped, a lot of these. And so if, let's say they can do these good things and put mitigations in place, and you know, because of our ordinances, they can do a really responsible data center. I mean, that's not a terrible thing. We've put some things in place, but if you don't ask for it, they're not going to do it. You know, I mean, you got to kind of ask for these things and realize that this would be important to us.
And while we're here, I noticed in the ordinance that was presented on the 5th, there isn't a lot of language about like a community benefits agreement process. Is that missing from this? do you know if it's on the way, or is that something that you all would advocate for?
What the Planning Commission decided in terms of what they sent forward to the Merit Commission was to require every single data center to have a special land use permit. So this process will require like multiple rounds of community feedback. And I think the idea with this is the community benefits would be assessed on a case by case basis through this permitting process. However, we would definitely like that to be included in the language.
So as you mentioned, originally, the text amendment set up this tiered system where, depending on certain characteristics of the project, it would be subject to more oversight. But as you just said, there have been some adjustments that you all advocated for that succeeded and are now in the ordinance as it's presented. So at this point, are there any types of data centers that can be built without the chance for public comment if this passes?
No, not at this time.
Okay.
That was huge for us, is everything mm-hmm. to have public, you know, where the public's going to be able to comment on it.
Are there still recommendations that you've made that haven't been addressed? And if so, what are those?
So we have a couple of recommendations that still need to be addressed. So my main one is energy use reporting. So Athens-Clarke County does not regulate energy. We are very aware of this. That's regulated at the state level by the Public Service Commission. However, because data centers use so much energy, we think it's important for the public in the local area to have insight into what energy they're using. Some other counties in Georgia have asked for like a outside audit of energy use by the data center annually, or reporting from the data center itself of the energy it's using. And I think that is something we'd really like to push for, even though we know that we cannot regulate the data center based on energy use. We want transparency. We want to know what energy they're using.
We don't want any NDAs. Like, we want to be very transparent what they're used for. We think that because of the data centers, the issues around it, no secrecy. Is what we huge on my on our list. The energy is huge, and then just the transparency, however that's going to look like, really making sure that we can get our we know what's going on in our backyard.
All right. Yeah. Well, Laura Iyer, Olivia Asher, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Emma.
Thank you.
Laura Iyer is the founder and chair of the Southern Sustainability Institute, a local environmental nonprofit. Olivia Asher is a member of the statewide science education organization, Science for Georgia. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA.
The BBC World Service.
What's going on here?
We get to the heart of global issues.
Stories we think matter from around the world.
Everything was there in a way that I'd never heard before.
Discussing the very best in global arts and culture.
What has been happening on the financial markets today?
Storytelling is something we absolutely love.
Everyone's voice is so unique.
Wow.
It's a celebration.
The BBC World Service.
Welcome back to Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley. The Rock Hawk and Rock Eagle Mounds are two well-visited sites near Eatonton, Georgia. The bird-shaped piles of stone built by prehistoric Native American peoples have been the subject of many archaeological explorations. But as a group of University of Georgia researchers, self-dubbed the Alliance, have found out, much mystery remains about who created the mounds, as well as their purpose. The Alliance is an interdisciplinary group spanning the sciences and humanities. Their research aim is to explore not only the geological characteristics of the sites, but also the stories told about them throughout Georgia history. Irvin Garrison is a professor emeritus of archaeological geology and geophysics at UGA. Sergio Bernardes is the associate director of UGA's Center for Geospatial Research. Dr. Jim Wilson is an instructor in the Department of English, and Abhijeet Sharma is a PhD student in the Department of English. Together, they sat down with WUGA's Emma Auer to discuss their discoveries at the Rock Hawk and Rock Eagle Mounds. Here's their conversation.
First of all, can you give us a little overview about the Rock Hawk and the Rock Eagle Mounds in or near Eatonton, Georgia? What do we know about them?
Well, Emma, they're two piled stone, monumental-sized effigies of birds. We're not exactly sure how old they are, but we believe they have some sort of ceremonial function and that our methods might reveal more about not only the dating, but why folks created them.
UGA owns the Rock Hawk and the Rock Eagle, and they have done so for decades. There have been archaeological studies at both. The eagle probably has had the most attention, but the hawk has had several, we'll call them interventions, for a better word, over the years. And I think the last, if Jim will remind me, I think was in the 2000s.
Yes. There was a cultural resource management survey, quite exhaustive survey by Southeastern Archaeology, but they just did a topographical map.
Do we know what people were looking for?
The idea is they're looking for artifacts. And in the case of both of the effigies, the artifacts will tell us who built them and when. Unfortunately, all the work that has been done at the Eagle and the Hawk have probably left more questions than answers. We suspect they were built sometime around 1000 CE, AD, but we can't be sure. So they retain a lot of mystery.
So what led you all together as a group to do research on these effigies?
The work that has been done at those locations, they didn't have access to the tools we have these days.
Right.
So we thought that by using these tools, and those would be particularly remote sensing, would be sensors that can see above ground, characterize the effigies digitally, but also see the subsurface, see what's under those piles of stones, that we could then provide a few answers and at least characterize those monuments in a way that they have not been characterized. And this is also tied to digital heritage preservation. Once you create that replica, there is a very accurate replica. It can work as a so-called digital twin. You can then use the digital twin to learn from the model without disturbing the effigy.
Can you give us a little overview of what some of your results have been? What have you discovered?
Subsurface, we're learning extraordinary things, not only about the structures, but I would say about the geology that characterizes the sites and that made them appealing for the builders to select in the first place.
Has anything emerged as existing below the effigy that you've discovered?
Well, that was the geological side. We suspected that the builders selected these sites because of a large quantity or outcrops of quartzite, which is a very hard, durable stone. Pretty unique to the Piedmont. You can go out in your backyard and pick up a piece of quartzite. But the quartzite at the Rock Hawk and Rock Eagle are massive. And we wanted to know, does that continue into the ground? And with radar, you can follow the outcrop. And we found that, yes, it does go deeply into the earth. And it may be one of the reasons that that's where the effigies were built.
Mm-hmm. One of the possibilities is that they used pre-existing, the boulders that were there, but also brought stones from other locations and created that pile or those piles of stones.
And when we think of the people interested in decoding these effigies, we usually think of the two of you, Sergio and Irv, anthropologists, archaeologists, but we also have here in the room two people who are experts in English and in literary production. Can you tell me about how this connects with that form of humanities research?
I've been mostly focusing on the literary interpretation and engagement with the effigy sites over time. And, you know, someone may ask, why is it necessary, right, for folks like me and Professor Wilson to be part of this project? I mean, first, it, of course, helps in understanding how the relationship between the locals and the effigy mounds have evolved over time. And also helps in understanding what kind of narratives were built around it by people who settled in this traditionally Muscogee Creek land, right?
The work doesn't end with the rock hawk and rock eagle. There are many other structures and monuments out there waiting to be studied. Mm-hmm. So whatever we learn from this, including the techniques and methods that we need to apply for this particular type of study, we can also take to other locations. And there are ramifications of this work that go even beyond cultural heritage preservation. Last year, we were invited to go to Texas and help with the searches linked to the Texas flood. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. these technologies can also help locate missing people from natural disasters or even from wars. This work is just starting.
Well, this has been really fascinating. Dr. Sergio Bernardes, Dr. Irvin Garrison, Dr. Jim Wilson, and Abhijit Sharma, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Irvin Garrison is a professor emeritus of archaeological geology and geophysics at UGA. Sergio Bernardes is the Associate Director of UGA's Center for Geospatial Research. Dr. Jim Wilson is an instructor in the Department of English, and Abhijit Sharma is a PhD student in the Department of English at UGA. They will present more about their work on the Rock Hawk and Rock Eagle Mounds on February 24th in Park Hall on the UGA campus from 4 to 5 p.m. You've been listening to Athens News Matters from WUGA News. The opinions expressed on this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of WUGA or the University of Georgia. This week's show was produced by Emma Auer. If you missed a portion of this broadcast, Athens News Matters is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and at WUGA.org, and will be rebroadcast Monday evenings at 8. As always, thanks for listening, and stay with WUGA throughout the week for the latest in-depth local news.